ain't misbehaving. They're just behaving.
Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you.
Welcome to this episode of Ain't Misbehaving. This time, I want to talk about punishment. But first, this episode's question. What has four legs, a tail, eats oats and hay, and sees equally well from both ends? Stay tuned to the end for the answer. Well, what is punishment? Well, the scientific definition of reinforcement and punishment is that reinforcement increases the behavior it follows, and punishment decreases the behavior it follows. So you might think that if we punish a dog or cat, then they won't do that again, whatever it was that you didn't like. But there's problems with this. It's more than just punishing to decrease behavior. There are emotions involved, and there are also issues where the creature being punished may associate the punishment with something besides their behavior. This is one of the potential problems with punishment. Carolina Westland has a website where you can read more about this. The website is ILLIS.SE/EN. On this website, Carolina has much information and good information. She has a blog, she gives webinars and lectures, she has courses. And this is one of the blogs that she did. It's called 20 Potential Problems with Punishment. So I want to hit on some of the highlights from this blog. Number two is it only works sometimes. So there may be a reinforcer maintaining that unwanted behavior, and the behavior may not change, even though we think we are punishing it. For example, you come in the door and the dog jumps up on you, which is an unwanted behavior. So you push the dog down, or even put your knee in the chest to make the dog get down, and the dog goes down. However, the attention that the dog gets from your hands and knees and other ways of seemingly punishing the dog actually just reinforces the behavior of jumping up. Another one is that the animals can habituate to low-level aversives. It's kind of like, you know, when you're in the store and there's a mom with a little kid who's being kind of annoying, doing stuff, and the mom says, "Stop," or "I'll say stop again." It may be, you know, a punishment in a deep voice, but really it's not stopping the behavior, and it's not even a threat of stopping the behavior. Same thing with animals. If you push a dog down to keep them from jumping up, they may go down. They may stay down for a while. But as soon as you move or offer another enticing move into the room, they may jump up again. So you push them down again, gently. But again, it's not enough to really make it so that the dog is going to learn to stay down. An example of this comes from my own experience with punishing animals. I've been at this a long time, long enough so that punishment was considered part of the toolbox. And we moved into a new house, and my cat was exploring and sniffing around and checking things out. And I'm sure other cats had lived in that house before. And when I saw her back up to a door jamb and kind of start wiggling her tail, I had a spray bottle in my hand. And so I sent a big spray of water, boom, right on her. And she stopped. Now, the trick there is I actually did it in the correct way. I squirted her, and then I immediately turned away and put my attention on something else, like, whoo, 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 what's going on? It wasn't me. And so she looked around, and apparently the only thing she thought that could have triggered that was the door jamb. And as I watched her over the next couple of days, whenever she went through that door, she made a wide berth around that portion of the door. But if I had taken the squirt bottle and went, no, no, and squirt, squirt, it wouldn't have been the door jamb. It would have been me. I would have been administering that. And she would subsequently have started to avoid me. So this leads to animals having superstitious learning. The animal may think something other than the unwanted behavior is triggering the punishment. A good example of this is leash reactivity. It's where a dog on leash sees another dog on leash or off leash and starts growling and lunging and all that kind of stuff, behavior that we don't like, unwanted behavior. So we pull the dog back. Now, that may be counterproductive to what we really want to do. And it could be that pulling the dog back isn't the dog understanding that his behavior means that the leash tightens. What it more likely says is every time I see a dog, the leash tightens and I get pulled back. So the presence of the other dog becomes the trigger for the dog becoming defensive. The presence of the other dog predicts that the leash will tighten. It's the presence of the other dog and not his behavior that is causing the leash to tighten. Leash reactivity needs a whole different approach. And that's something that will take a whole episode in itself. So stay tuned. Another problem with punishment is that if there's no other information given before the punishment's administered, then the punishment can become unpredictable to the dog. They don't know what's happening. All they know is that out of the blue, something happens that they don't like. A bad word, a harsh word, maybe something physical. But they don't understand the precursor to that. And so this can lead to a condition called learned helplessness. What the dog is learning, that if they just stay still, then staying still is staying safe. And so you see a dog that's not misbehaving anymore. They're just sitting there or standing there. And you think, oh, okay, problem solved. Except the problem is not solved. We have not really reached the dog on an emotional level. And what this has led to is that learned helplessness. And so from there, from them just staying still, and if things still continue to happen, the fear is still present. The fear is still present in that dog. And this fear does several things. One, it interferes with learning. So if you are actually trying to teach your dog cues, like sit, stay, down, all that kind of stuff, but there is punishment coming out of the blue if they don't perform, then it increases their fear and it interferes with learning. This increase in fear can also lead to aggression. It comes down to that basic tenet of fight or flight. The adrenal hormones go rushing through in a state of fear, and there's two options. You can try to get away, or if you can't get away, then you can defend yourself. So what we see in these dogs that have this underlying fear is a short freeze and then trying to escape. And if they can't escape, then they resort to aggressive behavior to defend themselves. So punishment can actually lead to much, much worse problems than we think we might be solving. But one of the biggest problems with punishment, any kind of punishment, is that it disrupts the bond between ourselves and the animal that we're trying to communicate with. So our pets, our dogs, our cats, the animals that we bring into our home to comfort us and to be companions, they begin to avoid us. And in extreme cases, they will start to become aggressive towards us. I have seen this in numerous behavior consultations that I've done, where the problem that I'm called in to evaluate is aggression towards family members. And it turns out that a family member has been trying to correct a behavior that they don't like. And so the pet has been avoiding them and going to a different family member for safety. Of course, this disrupts the whole family pack, the whole family bond, because one of the pack members is unpredictable. And if pushed, then that increases fear, and the fear leads to aggression, and that leads to me being called in. So let me talk about perfect punishment. It's not necessarily that punishment can be perfect, but if punishment is going to be applied, it needs to be perfect. The timing needs to be perfect. The association with the behavior needs to be perfect. And that's very difficult to do. Recently, I was asked about a puppy who had started chasing cars. He was on leash, of course, but again, anytime a car would go by, he would pull and lunge and try to get at the car. So, I don't know, maybe it's not that bad of a behavior, blah, 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 but it can be a danger to that puppy. If he ever slipped his leash, if the leash slipped out of the owner's hand, if the leash broke, that dog would be dead. So, how do we stop a dog chasing cars? When I first was told about this, it worried me very much. I love this little dog. And I thought, oh my God, I've got to stop this behavior now. And my mind went back to my very early days when punishment was part of the toolbox. And so I started to create a scenario where we would have a car he did not recognize, where we had someone driving the car that he did not recognize. There was someone in the passenger seat that he did not recognize. And then as we all got together and the car drove by and I would have him on the leash. And as the car drove by, the person would have something like one of those super soakers. Okay, so dog starts lunging, the window rolls down, the super soaker comes out and squirts the dog. And, okay, so the behavior decreases. Good idea? Maybe. However, upon reflection, I realized there were several problems with this. One, as I said, the timing would have to be perfect. The person driving the car had to go at a precise speed that would trigger the chase. And the person in the passenger seat would have to have exquisite aim. The punishment would have to be intense enough to stop the behavior. It couldn't just be a little squirt. Sometimes dogs like to play with the water. And the timing for the person on the leash had to be perfect, that had to let the dog know that it was the car that was producing this aversive that the dog did not like. So after thinking about this and thinking about, well, who could I enlist to do this? And would they be able to get the timing right, to get the aim right, to get the association right? I realized, my God, you know, that's too much. And then it really hit me of why this is not a good idea. This is not a good idea because why on earth would I want to instill fear into this little puppy that I love? So that plan was scratched. Did not happen. What I did do, though, is I started walking him a little bit more and starting in places where cars were going by pretty slowly so I could anticipate when there was a car coming. And whenever there was a car coming, I would say, car, click, and give him a treat. So this builds the association with an oncoming car, not being scary, but meaning, oh, there's a car. I'm going to get a treat. So it was that sequence of car, click, treat. And this puppy is so smart. He learned this within, I don't know, 10 minutes of walking him. And it got to the point where it didn't take long before he would see a car and turn to look at me. And I would give him a treat. Always give him treats. I'm the cookie lady. So I'm learning all the time, too. And one of the places I'm learning is from Carolina Westland's website, which is, again, ILLIS.SE/EN. And just check out some of her blogs. They're very fascinating. The answer to the bonus question, what has four legs, a tail, eats oats and hay, and sees equally well from both ends? Well, it's a blind horse.
If you have issues or topics that you are wondering about, you can send your questions to info@radiotacoma.org. Please put Ain't Misbehavin' in the subject line. You can give as much information in the email as you wish. If your question is chosen, I will answer it in detail on the program. Join us again for more sagas from the world of pet behavior problems.
This is Dr. Louisa reminding you,
they ain't misbehaving. They're just behaving.
I don't stay out late. Don't care to go. I'm home about 8, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving.